the religious Zionist movement in Israel and throughout the world is going through a tremendous re-energizing process, both in Israel and around the world. I just want to ask you for a moment, does anybody know what the word Mizrahi stands for? I would ask everyone, because I didn't actually know when I started working for Mizrahi. When Rav Soloveitchik was the leader of the Mizrahi movement and founded by, in America, and founded by Rabbi Ryanus in 1902, what does it stand for? Saw one hand, yes?
Somebody of the West.
No, no, so it's interesting, well, in the East, right, Mizrahi, but not. I always thought Mizrahi was the East, right? Of course, Mizrahi. You know what the Mizrahi movement was, by the way, right? When Herzl founded the World Zionist Organization, most Orthodox Jews and religious Jews felt that they could not partner with it because it was inherently a secular political movement. How do religious Torani Jews partner with an organization which is inherently secular and political? They had lots of ideological issues. Most decided not to, but there were a group of Eastern European rabbis, tremendous Talmidei Chachamim, who founded this movement, which became a worldwide movement, of which Rav Soloveitchik joined in the 40s and was the leader in America for many years. His Chamesh Drashot that he gave, and so many of his powerful Zionistic shirim were given at the Mizrahi conventions. Whenever I bump rabbis in America, they tell me how they remember as children Rav Soloveitchik speaking to thousands of people at the religious Zionist conventions, and so much of his thought on Zionism and religious Zionism was developed and publicized through those conventions. But when Rabbi Ryanus founded this in 1902, the only religious group to partner with the World Zionist Organization, he called it Mizrahi. Any idea why? When I started working with Mizrahi, I didn't actually know. Now I do. Outstanding. What's your first name? Daniel. You didn't just check that on the internet, eh? Because if you did, that's equally impressive. That's equally impressive. I'm even more impressed. No, not more impressed, but certainly very, very impressive. I just also want to say just a word. I know Rav Hillel mentioned Sarah Robinson, a big shout out to you. And an incredible amount of work you did last year for the Aryeh Fellowships. And this year is, and I don't know how you fit in with everything else that you're doing, and you just managed to come and join us for this. We appreciate that as well. We'll speak more about that at lunch, but we really shout out to you, and it's lovely to have you part of it. Go ahead. So, Merkaz Rouhani, he said, the World Zionist Organization is a secular political movement, but surely it needs to be connected to its spiritual roots. Perhaps we can be, not in any condescending way, in a level of partnership, a Merkaz Rouhani. Mizrahi stood for Mem Zayin. Maybe it was, by the way, playing on the East, perhaps Israel by Mizrahi, Libi by Mizrahi, maybe it was. But Mem Zayin, Merkaz, Rahi Rouhani. It was extracted from the words Merkaz Rouhani because he believed and he felt, and those founders felt, that that in life you can either partner or criticize from the outside. And with all of the challenges that the World Zionist Organization had then and the state of Israel has today, the Mizrahi movement was a group of religious, committed Torani Jews who felt that if you want to impact on the course of anything, you need to partner with it. You need to accept the things that you can accept. Obviously, distance yourself from the things that you don't, but at the same time, create a partnership to forge a partnership. And that's exactly what was created in 1902. And since then, the Mizrahi movement has aspired to be a Merkaz Rouhani, to get involved in everything to do with the Zionist movement and the Jewish people. We're sorry about this. Two things happened. You know, there's a building being built next door in Yerushalayim. This is amazing, the building over in Yerushalayim. So it creates a little bit of noise. And our air conditioning, our heater just went out yesterday. But so we're going to keep each other warm, our own warm, the warmth of Torah, but it's not too bad. It's not too bad. So just to say like this, I've interrupted myself in my own train of thinking. Merkaz Rouhani. So I wanted to say, what was I saying? Can you remember? Can you remind me what I was saying? Just trying to think of the point I was making about Merkaz Rouhani, the building. Anyway, so the first point I wanted to make is, I remember now, to impact from within. And since 1902 until today, the Mizrahi movement and all its religious Zionist affiliates in Israel have made a tremendous impact in every area of life. I'm sure you're all aware that one of the great revolutions that's taken, I mean, I could spend the next 15 minutes just talking about these revolutions. I just want to spend a minute or two. One revolution is women's learning. The women's learning in Israel, driven, the highest levels of women's learning across Israeli society of Torah learning, has been driven by the religious Zionist movement and of all different shades and types in the most unbelievable ways. And it's something not to be taken for granted that in Israeli society, all the midrashot, which didn't exist a number of decades ago, and of such high-level learning of all mitzvot of Torah, was something driven by the religious Zionist movement. A second and incredible one, I'm sure you all know about, is the army. It was unheard of 50 years ago to think, before there were yeshivot there, and before there now were mechinot, to think that at any point in the foreseeable future, close to a majority of officers in the Israeli army, like a Brigadier General Eitan we'll meet today, and many generals and Brigadier Generals are religious. So much of the middle ranking officers in the Israeli army, as you all know, are religious. This was thought many years ago, you can't do it. You're going to send your own people into the Israeli army. How are they going to keep up their own Yiddishkeit, let alone impacting everybody else, and therefore just kept at a tremendous distance. Look at that, there are 74 yeshivot there, many, many mechinot as well, and that has been removed. I could go on and on and on about yeshivot, about the Israeli political society. You go to the Knesset, I was at a meeting at the Knesset a few days ago, meeting Yehuda Glick, you know, Yehuda Glick, the individual, fascinating man, we're doing something, we want to be involved, we've got a whole Yom Shalayim program, we want to involve him in it, and you just see kippot everywhere. And you see skirts everywhere. And it's Am Yisrael today. It's Am Yisrael. It's no longer this bastion of secular political Jewish identity. It is something where the religious community is integrated. I could go on and on in the world of politics, in the world of academia, in the world in civil and civic society in Israel. It's an unbelievable revolution. And Mizrahi has been at the heart of that because I've always believed, if you want to impact on anything, do so from within. Partner with and do so from within. And that's what Mizrahi has done all of the years. I have to be honest with you, and this comes to the second point. I want to make 3 points today. That's point number one. Point number two. Over the last number of decades, the Mizrahi movement, and many of you probably in the States don't even know of, maybe just through Sarah, you've heard of the Mizrahi movement. The National Mizrahi Movement in America is called the RZA, the Religious Zionists of America. And it actually has not been... It has not been active for many years. It's only now being re-energized. There's a new executive director, Rabbi Gideon Schlush, you may know. Sarah's working on our recharge program. One of our rabbinic presidential heads is Rabbi Lenny Matenki from Chicago. Many of you may know, who's the previous chairman or president of the RZA, the RCA, the Rabbinic Council of American Rabbis. And the movement has now been re-energized. It is a far cry from what it was in the days of Rav Soloveitchik 30, 40 years ago. And there's a reason for this, and this is the second point I want to make. The success of the religious Zionist movement in Chutz La'aretz has been its failure. What was the number one focus of the Mizrahi movement, you know, before the State of Israel and post-1948? Can anybody tell me, what were they trying to do with Diaspora Jewry? What was their main raison d'etre for Diaspora Jewry? Where it began, because there were very few Jews living in Israel. Can anyone tell them? And you all know the answer to it, just got to think about it.
Make Aliyah.
Aliyah. Building Israel, supporting Israel. If you're in Israel, make a difference, and if you're not, make Aliyah. So the success was our failure throughout religious Zionist communities everywhere. They were less focused on building their own communities, understandably, and very focused on doing what? Aliyah, aliyah, aliyah. And tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of people were part of the B'nai Akiva, Mizrahi movement, and all the different offshoots made aliyah, and continue to make a massive difference in Israel. But ladies and gentlemen, what has happened in the last 40 years? The Mizrahi movement in so many places, of which Rav Soloveitchik was a driving force in America, which had transformational impact. In South Africa, some of our friends here from South Africa, like myself, studied in a school called Yeshiva College, which was founded, it's the first Torah school founded in South Africa in 1953. Who was it founded by? The Mizrahi movement. Some from Australia learned at the Yavne School, founded by Mizrahi. Mizrahi founded educational institutions and was a powerful movement, but what did it then do? It slowly worked itself into glorious irrelevance. Why? Because it was relevant if you were making Aliyah, and if you were not, who are not yet making Aliyah, not much was happening. They weren't building organizational infrastructure, investing in communities and yeshivot and in youth movements, B'nai Akiva to an extent, absolutely. And that's one of the crowning successes, even in the States, the Moshavot, etc. But if you were post-school age and post-youth movement age, there was almost nothing for. I would see this in South Africa. The reason I stayed so long in South Africa, I thought I was going, I'm South African born, but I've made Aliyah. I thought I'll go, and my parents have made Aliyah. I said, I'll go back and serve the community for 2 years. 2 years became 15. Why did I stay so long? I'm still trying to work out, but I know why. I stayed so long because I realized I went back to the Mizrahi community, which itself had lost its raison d'etre. You could hardly find religious Zionist rabbis and educators. And many people, if they were serious about the Yiddishkeit, they would move across to the more to the right, to the Haredi movements, because they had invested in Chutz La'aretz. Kol hakavod to them. And in the 40 years that Mizrahi, 50 years, was so focused on Israel like we shouldn't be, what had happened? Two things have happened today as the Jew. They've either moved to the right, less affiliation, acculturalization, Rahman al-Islam assimilation, sorry, to the left, or more to the right, towards a more Haredi, which is, again, Haredi is a beautiful brand of Judaism and expression of Judaism, but it's not quite the Mizrahi way in terms of, as you said, partnering with the World Zionist Movement and trying to do Torah al-Madah, as why you're not sort of aging. were all about. And where were we? We were focused on Israel. So yes, in Israel you can look at 50% of Israeli army officers are religious, and women's learning and so many different things. And you go to diaspora communities, and the voice of religious Zionism is nowhere near as strong as it could and should be. Now we have re-energized in certain places. It's strong in Melbourne, Australia. It's strong in a number of other places. We work very hard in South Africa and in Toronto and in other places, in London now, and in places in the States. But really what is happening now, that's the second thing I wanted to say. We are in the process of re-energizing World Mizrahi. I have the privilege to be the head of the World Mizrahi movement. And our aim over here is to focus on diaspora Jewry. We've said there are enough people focusing on Israeli society in the religious Zionist movement. Not enough of us focusing on how can we play a transformative role. And our thinking day and night, and it's in our DNA every day, what can we do? And I don't have too much time to tell you all of our programs, because there's one other message I want to share with you. But for instance, one of the programs we have, and there's some members who are sitting in the room now, it's a leadership program called Shohevet. We have another one called Money Good Pronit. This recharge program is obviously on a much smaller scale. But the Shohevet program, we are blessed to have 35 men and women studying, most of them studying Smicha, the men and the women studying whatever they're studying, and some education, some other things, most of them academic degrees all together. And the idea is each person in this program is committed to serve a diaspora community. They come here once a week into this room, and we learn for 3 hours. We have some Shani Terrigan, who many of you know, is a major part. She's on our Education Advisory Board, and many other leading rabbinic thinkers, Talmidei Chachamim, Talmidei Chachamot, and academics. And we put a lot of energy and effort into training, recruiting and training young men and women who, by the way, have to be fluent in English. If they are not fluent in English, they don't get accepted, because we want people to go from Israel to America who can talk with the cultural codes and language codes, and to England and South Africa and Australia, wherever they might go, Toronto, wherever it might be. So, and I want to welcome those from Shalhevet over here. We at the moment have 6 graduate couples already from Shalhevet. I don't know if there's anybody here from Maryland University, anyone from Maryland? So we have both the Hirshhorns, Rav Yoni and Avital, and the Sikkens as well. Both the Sikkens and the Hirshhorns in Maryland are both graduates of our program. Is anyone at Binghamton? No, it's at Binghamton. There's also a couple of ours, the Vices also. The 3 couples which went to the United States all went from Shalhevet to work on campuses. And there's others, one in Bern, Switzerland, one in the UK, one in South Africa. Ilan Lavan from Sydney and his wife Shira went back to Melbourne. Are you from Sydney? There you go. It's also okay. So they came here for a year and have just gone back. So our Sydney Ciders, I like that word. Sydney Cider. Okay. So ladies and gents, one of the programs is Shalhevet, which is trying to give super quality young men and women. By the way, there are women. You'll see there's a program called Eshkolot that Shani Terrigan is very involved in. Some of the Eshkolot ladies studying to be Tanakh teachers to go back to the United States and teach on the program as well. And we're basically trying to get a pool of people who want to serve the diaspora Jewry from Israel, right? To go. So I'm also making an appeal to all of you. If any of you are thinking of going into education, wanting to do Smicha, and coming back to Israel, we would love to be involved with you. We'd love you to join Shalhevet. We'd love you to think of not only how you can serve your communities now on the campuses, but also how you can serve them in the future. So please bear that in mind. We have a wonderful cadre of people. And this really is crystallizes the second point I wanted to make. You know, Naftali Bennett, the head of the Bayit Yehudi party, said the following line. You know, sometimes you hear a line that somebody says and it really touches the truth. He said the following thing, which I think more than anything crystallizes our thinking at Mizrahi Olami. What did he say? He said like this. He said it in Hebrew, I'll just say it to you in English. I'll say it in Hebrew as well. He said, throughout all of our history, he said, of the Zionist history, he said, Medinat Yisrael haita mif'alo shel ha'am ha'yehudi. The state of Israel was the project of the Jewish people. But he says, now that there's a strong state in Israel, he says, ha'am ha'yehudi tzarich liot mif'ala shel Medinat Yisrael. Now the Jewish people needs to be the project of the state of Israel. And you know what has happened? One of the most profound changes that I'm seeing in Israel, Israelis don't, and Israeli society is no longer this miskin state which says, you know, support, we need you. Well, of course, there are billions of dollars every year which come to support enormously important institutions, and Israel does need the support of the diaspora Jewry. But there are so many communities in the diaspora which are turning to Israel to support them. And I think we have the fulfillment today, ladies and gents, of Himitzion Tetzai Torah. The yeshiva world transformation in terms of men's and women's learning is an absolute transformation. There's arguably never been more Torah learning in the Jewish world than there is today. And almost all the major yeshivot in Israel are in the world are in Israel. My Rosh Hashiva Rabbi Zalman Malan, if Rebbe Al, when I studied there for a few years, said, he said when he went to the first meeting of yeshiva students across the board, Hasidic, Misnagdish, Tzionim, Merkaz Rav, everybody, he said in the early 1950s, he said you could put every yeshiva bocha in Israel into half a hall in Tel Aviv. You could count them on your hand. There was maybe 1,000 or 2,000. There was nothing. Today there are well over 120,000, 130,000 people. The revolution is unbelievable. The state of Israel, as we all know, is a powerful economic power, political power, a regional superpower, and of course Israel faces enormous challenges, and each and every day is a bracha and enormous challenges. But the fact that Israel can now see itself as the center of the Jewish people, that Israeli society is now the biggest community in the world, has the most collection of Jews, more than anywhere, which also is a miracle in and of itself. I can't talk about it now because we don't have time for it, but you know, I have an idea, please God, for a book, hopefully to come out by the time of the 70th anniversary of Israel, of the seven wonders of the modern world in terms of the Jewish people, how Israel has revitalized everything about its national life. One of those is the language. To understand, to take a dead language that, like Latin, was only studied by academics when they studied Talmud, and when they studied Chumash or whatever, and Tanakh, which wasn't studied that much in the diaspora, and revitalized a dead language, which was an academic language, after 2,000 years, to the only successful experiment in the world of an entire people of 6 million. There are many other languages, like the Gaelic, Irish language, others they're trying to reinvent from the dead, and then nobody can do it. Everybody looks, how did you do it? Never mind everything else you did it. How did you reinvent a language? How did you get people, to millions of people? How does this Ulpan idea work, which has been trying to immerse people? So we can talk about the ones, just the language itself is an unbelievable, let alone the land and the Jewish people we won't talk about now. But ladies and gentlemen, we are a center today. We in world Israel think, how can we work within Israeli society and our religious Zionist modern Orthodox community to serve the Aspergeries, to send our best Rabbonim and educators to campuses, to schools, to shuls, to movements, to make a difference, and many other, lots more programming. We have a very big, I'll tell you just one other program we're working very hard on is Yom Yerushalayim. It's the 50th year of Yom Yerushalayim. One of the things we're trying to do this year is to bring as many rabbinic leaders, community leaders, and delegates from our hundreds of affiliated communities around the world to be in Israel for Yom Yerushalayim. It's a very, very big undertaking, because you're not subsidizing people to come, even though I must just say there may be, which I'll talk to Sarah and OJ, I see there may be an opportunity of student sponsorship, not through us, another organization. So watch that space in May. If you're not in the middle of your final exams, May 22nd to 25th, there may be an opportunity of a collaboration of student organizations throughout Israel, making it incredibly affordable for students to come here during that time to be present. Rabbi Jonathan Sachs is the Aliyah HaLaregel of today. He's coming. Rabbi Jonathan Sachs is our special guest. He's coming especially for us, and he needs 2 minute video clip, which maybe we'll show everyone during the course of the day. We can show you maybe. Sorry? Or maybe we'll show it in a minute. In fact, maybe we'll do this to 10:30. So make yourselves comfortable for another 10 minutes. Yeah, for me. Unfortunately for you. So maybe at 10:35, Rabbi Hillel, we'll show the 2 minutes, the 2 minute clip. So let me finish the second point. What we are trying to do here at World Mizrahi, along with our branches around the world, is re-energize religious Zionism as a relevant force back into diaspora Jewry. Yes, we want people to make Aliyah, and yes, Aliyah is absolutely important, but still 50%, by the way, does anybody in this room know, and we'll maybe have a bit more about this from Mark Rosenberg from Memphis Benefit, how many people from the United States of America, on average over the last 10 years, made Aliyah? Let's say there are around 5 million Jews in the United States, fair amount, ladies and gents? About 5 million?
Or more.
Let's say 6 million, okay? Of those 6 million, how many make Aliyah on average over the last 10, 20 years? On average, what's the number? And with Nefesh B'Nefesh is incredible work. They are an unbelievable organization on every level. So I started to think what would happen without Nefesh B'Nefesh, but with Nefesh B'Nefesh work. And by the way, Nefesh B'Nefesh, one of their greatest achievements is also stopping people returning. Many people make Aliyah and they struggle. The retention rate is not very high. And perhaps Mark will speak about that. Now, the retention rate is much higher. They're unbelievable. But how many people do, of 6 million Jews, how many make Aliyah every year? About?
1,500.
No, so it's not as bad as that for a Hashem. Sorry, not 1,500. About between 3,000 and 3,500. Now, those are negligible numbers. If you start doing levies and naught points, whatever. It's tiny, tiny percentages, right, making aliyah. So if your only message to people is aliyah, then you're talking to 0.00% of the people actually making aliyah. Aliyah for Kuslaris is important. I believe in it with every fibre in my being. I made aliyah as a child. As an 80-year-old, my parents made aliyah. It's absolutely critical. So that the first year, Abraham Avinu, it's absolutely critical. It's central to everything Judaism is about. But you know who has to think about aliyah in Kuslaris? It's the people in Kuslaris. That is their cheshbon. Our cheshbon over here is not to go and criticize people being where they are. To educate, yes. To bring the powerful powerful role models who represent what Israel is about and how many people won't make aliyah as a result of it. But our responsibility, ladies and gents, is to think, what can we do for the Esther Jury to entrench the values of Torah, of Eretz Yisrael, and hopefully as there's a deeper love for Israel, and people will want to be part of communities such as this and get involved, people also make aliyah, Bezrat Hashem. But again, to summarize my second point, we are called Mizrahi. Our aim is to bring as many to serve the Aspra Jury in as however we can, to connect the Aspra Jury to Israel through many initiatives like Yom Shalom and others, and for us to bring our leaders from the Aspra to go to the place. General time has arrived, so I'm just going to make my last point very, very briefly. Welcome, I'll just demo, thank you. So, just to say like this, here's the final point that I want to make, and there you go, that's what this day is about. If there's one thing that being a Jew has taught me, it's the following. This is my message to you. If there's one thing that being a Jew has taught me, it is how a very, very small group of people can make an absolutely transformative impact wherever they find themselves. There are only 14 million Jews in the world, 14.5, 15. There are 7 billion people. There are less than 1/5 of 1%. In the United States, where there's a huge amount of Jews relatively, we are under 2% of the population, and that is considered a massive Jewish community. Under 2% of the population. In South Africa, 75,000 of 50 million, it's 1/5 of 1%. But I guarantee you, you ask any American non-Jew, any South African non-Jew, how many Jews they think there are. Ask an American non-Jew, not somebody who knows the statistics, the average person, how many Jews you think there are in America. Well, Trump's whole administration is surrounded by Jews. Well, maybe there must be 100 million Jews in America. You won't hear less than 20, 30, 40 million. You won't hear that. Can't be. Can't be that 2% of the people, wherever they go, have an impact. In South Africa, the 75%. I was speaking to a bank of managers in South Africa, and I said to them, how many Jews do you think there are in South Africa? The average guess was between 3 and 5 million. I said, but there's 75. They said, you can't. Rabbi, you lie. Cannot be that there's 75 Jews, 1,000 Jews. Being a Jew means the following. Being very small in number, but seeing yourself as responsible wherever you go to make a massive difference. And I could go on about Hanukkah, the story of Hanukkah, and I could go on about so many different things. Being a Jew means we have a responsibility to be very small in number, it says, Vatema Ma'at Nikol Amim, says Moshe Rabbeinu. We are the smallest of people, but our impact is tremendously great because we've been blessed with an ability of divine grace and ability to take responsibility. And I want to bless each and every one of you, you know, as we go through this day and you go back to your communities and your campuses, is to see yourselves as making the biggest possible impact that you can. That's what it's about. It's seeing yourself as responsibility, responsible. And I'll end with a quote, and I'll say this to Shalevit, Devon Shalevit, Shalatur. It's one of my favorite quotes, and I'll end with this. Margaret Mead, one of the leading American anthropologists many years ago, she said the following. It's an amazing comment. It's one of those ones that I always remember. She said, people say, says Margaret Mead, that a small group of people cannot change the world. Indeed, she says, as one who's studying anthropology, it is the only thing that ever has. The only thing that has ever changed the world is a small group of committed people in any area of human endeavor who committed their strengths and their passions to and build a team around them, part of the team. That's the only thing that has ever changed the world. And Bezrat Hashem, may each and every one of you not only believe what your peace got from today, but to see yourselves as people who can and have a part of the tradition of people who constantly change the world far beyond our numbers. And that's what we're trying to do in our small world is roughly another RCA's regeneration now, Rav Shlush and Sarah and everything that they're rebuilding also has got a vision for American Jewry. And wherever we find ourselves, each and every one of us, to be able to see ourselves responsible and to remember, people say small groups of people cannot change the world. It's the only thing which ever has. So have a wonderful day. I look forward to being with you today.
Did we screen it?
Okay.
Is that okay? Yeah. All right, so we'll screen it 4 minutes.